So then your education, where did you go to your elementary school?
I went to Holland Hall and graduated there.
And out of high school?
Right.
And what year did you graduate?
1970.
Then what happens to you?
Well, I was going to pursue, you know, postgraduate, you know, a formal degree. But when I got out to California, which is where I'd been accepted, I ended up meeting some people in the concert business and basically dropped out and did not pursue a formal degree, but did study some technical courses and studied electronics and audio electronics at the time, and was able to meet with people who were in the audio business, which at the time was just in the beginnings of its development in terms of live concert audio, which was what I was interested in.
And you were playing piano out there, I suppose.
No, I dropped music at that point. I was concentrating on the technical side of all this. I didn't take up piano again until probably 20 years ago. So there was a 20 or 30 year span where I didn't play.
Okay, then why did you pick it up?
Well, it was after my divorce, and it was a good therapy. Mm-hmm. And it still is. You know, any musician will tell you that mm-hmm. it kind of keeps you sane to play music and figure out musical challenges and that kind of thing.
You said you were divorced from that marriage. Did you have children?
Yes, I have one daughter, Ashley.
What does she do?
She's a therapist in Austin, Texas, a licensed clinical therapist.
Okay.
Yeah.
But in California, was it the sound design business that you learned
there? Yes, yes. In Southern California, I met some people there, and then it turns out they were from the Bay Area. So that's where we went next. And from that basis, I was able to meet the sound design people there that were doing sound design for all of the groups at the time. Grateful Dead, Jefferson Airplane, Journey, Doobie Brothers, all the big groups out of the Bay Area at that time. And so I basically worked for him, and we were able to go out and do concerts and do audio for these groups. And we kind of had to make it up as we went. These days, when you buy an audio system, you can order it out of a box and it arrives and you unpack it and you plug it in, it's ready to go. That's not how it worked then. There were industrial paging systems. Movie theaters had sound systems, but they weren't quite heavy enough to do concert audio, so they had to be modified. There were just lots of gyrations we went through developing what has become the concert audio system business, which, like I say, now has been standardized to a point.
Mm-hmm. So then you did bring that knowledge to Tulsa.
Yes.
And so you were in California then for how many years?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
And then you decided to come home.
Right. And a high school acquaintance of mine, Robert C. Bradley Jr., he had just graduated from Duke University, where he had been the concert promoter there for the university for the 2 or 3 years that he was in that position. And he had brought in all the big groups of the time to Duke. And he was quite the character, and so he knew that I was doing sound system technology. So he contacted me, and he said, we need to go down to this place. It's Kane's Ballroom. And we walk in, and he was trying to purchase Kane's from the then owner, a lady named Marie Myers. And so we met Marie, and she was an elderly lady who was sometimes living in the office down there. And we long story short, we took Kane's, which at that point was not doing much. It was doing a few square dances, which would draw, 50 or 100 people. But Robert Bradley thought that it could be, you know, a famous concert facility. And he was having to kind of argue that point with most of his friends. He had, some other people were helping him at the time. Jeff Nix was helping him. Jim Edwards and some others were helping him. And I was the technical consultant in terms of audio and acoustics. So we brought the sound system. We constructed a sound system for Canes at that time. And RC started promoting shows in there. For 2 years we were there, or from 73 until 75. And then Larry Schaefer bought it basically from RC.
Well, Canes, of course, had been famous for Bob Wills and all the country acts. And then so then RC comes along with the more contemporary acts. And
he was the first guy to put contemporary acts in there.
And so that was a hard sell for some people, probably, because they envisioned it as, oh, that's country. Is that true?
Well, when you say hard sell, he was RC was trying to find investors. He totally believed in it. If you understand the music business, you understand that just selling tickets is the name of the game. And if Bob Wills' music was popular during the 40s, you know, and it's 1973, you've got to fast forward to 1973 and bring in the talent that people want to see then. And he was good at that. He brought in a lot of popular groups of that era. We did get to meet the remains of whoever was left from the Bob Wills group. They would come down. They were interested in what we were doing. It was a lot of fun. They would just drop in. You know, Johnny Lee Wills was still alive then, and Chamlin, I think I'm the guitar player, he would stop by. And as well as a lot of the other artists who had participated in the Western Swing movement. They'd stop by because they were so interested in how the Western Swing dance hall could be doing modern music now.
Right.
Right.
We're talking 70...
73 until 75, yeah.
That's for a year with them.
That was the 2 years that RC had it, right.
And then you said Larry Schaefer had it. We should bring in Dr. Jim Rogers here.
Right.
Who bought it from...
Well, it went through another owner after Schaefer, Finnerty, Danny Finnerty.
Yes.
And then Danny Finnerty... sold it to the Rogers family.
Okay.
And they're the ones who brought it up to modern day standards.
They rehabbed the place.
Oh,
didn't they?
Completely. Yeah.
Dr. Rogers, of course, passed this past year. We have his oral history, and he talks about that.
Yeah.
And so his sons now operate it.
Right. Chad and Hunter.
And
right.
They bring in.
They do a great job. They've been able to elevate, the caliber of entertainment. At that, it was a vision that my friend RC always had, and he was trying to convince all his friends that this place is going to be great someday. And everybody around him were like, "Yeah, okay." But the Rogers family did it. Well, give Schaefer a lot of credit too. There's an old saying in the concert business that if you can bring in the right artist, it doesn't matter what venue you put it into, you're going to sell tickets to it. You know,
build it and they will come.
Bring in the artist and they will come.
Right.
It's almost that simple. It's down to the artist that you have on the stage. However, if you make the facility better, that has benefits also.
Yeah, and the facility is a draw for the performer. If he says, "I don't want to perform in that kind of place," then, you have to have it attractive.